हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So what we did.
Yeah, what we did, you know, so this is a synopsis. So, you know, we can do this first and then start with practice, but students are, because we don't have the papers now, right now with them.
Oh, okay.
This is the school.
Oh, function. These two?
Yeah, these two pages. It's like 1, 2, 3, and 4. And this is the analogy based on which, you know, the entire thing has been based on.
In the means we've done two, we've done four sutras.
We've done four sutras from part four. We just began with part four, the last part of chapter one.
Okay.
And four sutras we've completed.
Okay. And everybody has this?
This is
no. Oh, okay. So just to give
it,
give
it. I thought of it.
Okay. Okay, so continuing with the fourth pada of the first chapter. So then what you have here is from the fifth verse, so then we have a synopsis of the previous four. So, of course, whoever has an eidetic memory, then, you know, you don't have to worry about it. But, for the other mortals that are here, then we have difficulty remembering what we ate for lunch yesterday. yes. Okay. The fourth pada, synopsis of fourth pada. The fourth pada of the first chapter is specifically directed against the Shankyas. This section examines some passages from the Upanishads where terms occur which may be mistaken for the names of the insentient matter of Sankyas. It declares authoritatively that the Vedanta texts lead no support whatsoever to the Shankya theory of creation or the doctrine of Pradhana. That means the atheistic. Right, the theistic, what we're used to, then that's what is given by Kapila Muni. So that will be the same as what Vedanta Sutra is presenting. But the atheistic, then Shankyas, then this is against that. So doctrine of Pradhana is the same. Pradhana is the source of everything, but they don't understand that Krishna is the potency by which the Pradhana is functioning. Right. This section proves that Brahman is the material as well as the efficient cause of the universe. See, because for the impersonalists, then they'll have a problem. I mean, they have a lot of problems, but means they can't get a straightforward sandwich like that, because whenever they go in, then they'll say, make me one with everything. Right? You know, so they'll always get, the works. They can't just get, oh, I only want this or that. Then they can't maintain their position as they impersonalize, right? So, the difficulty comes down is that Lord Chaitanya points out this contradiction, because in Krishna, all contradictions are reconciled, but if it's not connection to Krishna, they're not. Right? So then you have the point is where the impersonalists, you know, which Shankyas will be one of them, just a particular branch of that. So then they'll be saying that the soul and Brahman are the same. Right? But at the same time, they're saying that they're different because Brahman is transcendental and that the jiva themselves is illusion. Right? So if you're illusion, how are you Brahman? You understand? So this is a total, it doesn't make any sense at all. And this is the actual foundation of their philosophy. So it's just a matter of where they take it back to, where this and that. It's just little details between all these varieties of kind of impersonalism. They base it all on the Veda, so that gives them agnostic element, is that they accept authority, they accept the Veda, they know there's the Supreme, but they can't take it beyond that. They can only understand the unlimited aspect and the unchanging aspect, because that's as far as you can get with material intelligence. Right? So then the difficulty comes is that they will say that pradana is the cause of everything. So whenever it's talking about certain words, then they're taking it that the pradana or the avyakta is the source. Right? So this will be, you know, it's just another aspect of it. So adhikarana 1. Pradana, the inferred. Anumana adhikaranam. 141. The word avyakta refers to the body, so this is what we're saying or what they're saying. As they argue. Yeah, okay. Okay, the atheistic Shankya philosophers argue the word avyakta refers to the body and not pradana. The passage compares the body to a chariot. So this is their philosophy?
This is our Kathopanishad, the chariot
thing. Yeah, no, but I'm just saying this here is what they're saying, or who's saying this?
They said avyakta is pradana, but you say that it is avyakta is the body. So that is how we are proving now, you know, with the help of this particular analogy of the chariot, which is compared to senses, body, and everything. This is what
I'm doing. No, the point is, this is what we're saying, or this is what they're saying?
This is what we are saying.
We are saying. Yes. So it's from the doubt that's theirs.
Yeah, doubt is theirs. And then this is the reply.
So then why mention this here? As the atheistic Shankya philosophers argue.
Yeah, because we should know what is their definition of avyakta and what is our definition of avyakta that we are proving.
Yeah.
So avyakta is
the word avyakta refers to the body, which we're saying.
Yeah, which we are saying. But
and not the pradana.
And not the pradana.
Oh, as the atheistic philosophers argue. Okay. They're just in that case.
Yeah.
Okay, the passion compares the body to a chariot. So we're saying avyakta means the body, and they're saying it doesn't. Right? Because they're taking it as that's the source of everything. Okay. One higher than the other, bottom-up approach.
This is senses are higher than the sense of fixing, that's all.
Yeah, okay, we could also do it top-down. Okay, Purusha is then the top, then what we'll say, avyakta, then the Atma, intelligence, then the mind, senses, sense objects, and the senses. So then, and that, then this is what they're saying or what we're saying?
This is what we are saying. The mapping is already been done.
Okay. So then the avyakta then is the pradana, right? So you have the material world.
The avyakta is the body. That is what we are putting down.
Then put it here, please. Don't put question marks. There's question marks there.
Yeah. Question mark means what is avyakta? Is it pradana or that is the body, you know? Therefore it's a question mark. And therefore it says above the body
is... So, but I mean... Okay. Here. You explain it. You know what I'm saying? It has to be obvious. That's the whole point of having a study. If we don't want it obvious, we'll just tell everybody to read the Vedanta Sutra as it is. We don't need commentaries. We don't need us to go through and figure out what's the Sutra Prakashika, the, you know, and all these different things. That's why we're here. Because it's not obvious what this is at all. Why put question marks there? You can say the question is about that, but you've already said that up here. Avyakta is the material energy, if this is our philosophy. So you have the material energy. Then the Atma is the passenger within that. The intelligence is the driver, mind the reins, sense object the field of actions, and then the horses. But all that is made out of material energy. It's avyakta. Because pradana is not anything. It's just there. Right? Okay. Above the body is left, which is equated to the avyakta. Hence, avyakta refers to the body. Doubt. Since the body is visible, how can it be called invisible, avyakta? The next sutra answers. Body here means the subtle body, as the kaja body, the seat of the gross body. Because the meaning of the word avyakta is suitable to describe the subtle body. since it is invisible to our eyes. So, who's saying this? No, I'm just saying, who's saying this? The body here means the subtle body, as the Kajra body.
We are saying,
we're saying. Okay, so that's why you have, okay. And then, so we're saying that. Then three, by the interpretation of the term of Vyakta, the atheistic Shankya philosophers wish to prove Pradhan to be the independent cause of creation. Okay. Pradhan to be the independent cause of creation. Okay. But Pradhan is dependent upon the Supreme Lord. It produces effects by the glance of the Lord. It cannot do this independently, since it is inert. So they're trying to say that it can act independently.
Yeah.
Right. And we're saying it can't. It has to act by the Supreme Lord. Then in 4, the followers of Shankya say that liberation is caused by distinguishing Pradhan from the Jiva, Purusha. Thus they say that Pradhan is an object of knowledge for gaining certain powers, because no words in the text establish a Vyakta as the object of knowledge. Does not mean Pradhan in this text. According to Vedanta, Pradhan is material nature in the unmanifested state. It is, therefore, cannot be an object of knowledge. But the atheist and Shankya philosophers take Pradhan to be knowable. Therefore, the conception of Pradhan is altogether different from the Vedic explanation, right? So here's where then they'll go off, right? So everybody will follow up to a particular point because they're following the Vedas. And they're giving evidence from the Vedas. So then you have that common aspect where they're all able to explain up to a certain point. And because they think about it a lot and all that, and they're working with material intelligence, it's clever, and so therefore the material intelligence likes it. Not that it's real or it's a fact. Right? But the whole idea is that this is then where they go. They're saying that Pradhan can be known. So the living entity coming from Pradhan, by knowing Pradhan, then one wants to know one's separate position. And then one experiences the whole material creation when you've seen that that's actually not as good as just being merged in Pradhan. Then one goes back to that position. Does that make sense? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but does that make sense that that's what they're saying? Right? Because that's their idea. That's how their liberation happens. So they'll merge in Pradhan. Right? So their point is that we've become separate through that. But actually, there's no, we've come here, we're checking it out, seems to look good, but it's not so great. So that's why then through knowledge, you'll know Pradhan, know yourself, and then you'll come back to Pradhan. Right? Yeah.
What Avyakta has to do with that?
Avyakta, so we're saying it's the body, and they are saying it is?
Pradhan.
So we're saying that the body is made out of Avyakta, but they're saying that when they're referring to Avyakta, they're referring to the Pradhan itself, not to the body. So they're
the body of the living entity.
Yes, the body is a living entity. So we're pointing out is that, see, Avyakta, when we say the body, then the body being made up of the 24 elements, but it functions according to the, what do you call it? Original laws that are there in the primary creation. Right? And so being in that position, then you can refer to anything. So we don't make so much of, we don't need to make that much of a distinction between the primary and secondary, because the secondary is just a manifestation of the primary. And it's there, but it's made out of the 24 elements. So therefore, then, for us, our connection with the world is through our body. Because if you're not counting the body, what's the point of the connection? We don't float around and just look at it however we like. So through the senses, we're able to then see the field. So that's why we say the body is the field. We might say, no, but everything around us is the field. No, but that field can only be appreciated through the body. If you can't perceive it with the body, it's not a field for you. So in other words, your body with the senses and the mind and intelligence, that is the field. And then it happens to be in situations. So you can count the whole thing as the field. Does that make sense? But so in this way, then avyakta becomes that whole thing, right? But then the point is then where is that cause from? Where is it from? So then they'll want to say it's from Pradhan, or we'll say it's from Brahman. It's from the Lord. You know?
They just don't take it further back enough.
Any of these philosophies, they never go far enough back, and they don't necessarily use all of the various tools that are given in the Vedic literature. Like Nyaya will just use logic, right? You know, apply just that much logically. Well, then Vaisheshika will have that element of logic, and it'll add into that aspect of the atomic theory, is that because if just by logic you have to be very intelligent to be able to distinguish, right? But then in the atomic theory, then you can say everything goes back to Adam. So the body is there; it's just a manifestation of a few of the atoms of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But they're part of just a greater amount of these elements. So at some point, the body dissolves and it goes back into the reservoir of these. And then the next manifestation of something, then it comes out as something else. So it's like, traditionally the body turns into, either, I say, daisies, I think that's the popular one, like that. You have something like that. So somebody dies, and one of the ways to refer to that is he's pushing up daisies. From under the ground, the daisies come up and stuff like that. So. it depends upon where you are in the world. I think in Kampuchea, then they grow long grass, like that. So different places they have different work that they're doing, right? So it just transforms into another thing. So that's the whole point, is it makes it really easy when you look at it from atoms. Because it's just atoms will come together, then they'll dissipate, then they'll come together. So that's constantly going on. So all the different bodies are manifesting and unmanifesting, but the atoms remain, which is correct. But then they'll only take it up that far, right? Then Shankya then will get into the detail of the 24 elements, which these other two don't really. It's not that they don't have a problem of their existence. Because they're defined, but they're it's not a major player in their philosophy. So then the elements are there, and then just by analyzing that, but then when you get to Patanjali, then you bring in meditation, the mind. So that's the first point, is you're dealing with an element where the mental capacity takes a role. Because before that, it's basically just intelligence. Mind, of course, is there, but it's just intelligence. You have to be very intelligent in other words, the first three philosophies are just for nerds, like that. Then Patanjali then brings in the mind, the meditation. Like you can see, the first three aren't really popular. But yoga, now that's something that people can relate to, because the mind comes in, the body, all these different things. And so then they'll take it up, and they'll get it a little far, they'll get up to the super soul. But their purpose of this meditating the super soul is they'll come back again to Brahman. So they don't actually keep it in the personal aspect, right? Where we're talking about the impersonal. The devotional, then, like we see in the Bhagavatam, they meditate on the super soul, surrender the super soul, and then take up devotional service. Like Dhruv Maharaj and the Prajapatis and others like that. So they're using the system in its appropriate way, as the Vedanta explains. But these others, they use these systems that only take, like you said, they only take it up to a particular level. So each one goes a little higher. So whichever the higher one is, the next one, it can explain things that the previous one can't. And so then on this level, then your Jaimini, then it can deal with all these others. and he's got it very nice, and his advantage is he's then using all the verses of the Veda. He can give an explanation of any of the verses. While these other four, they'll only deal with those verses that actually support what they're saying, or at least they feel it supports. So they don't have a system to interpret every verse.
A comparison between, like, just trying to understand the two philosophies of Sankhya and Vaisheshika. When Vaisheshik says, you know, that everything is atoms.
Right.
Atoms are manifest. And when Sankhya, you know, they speak of Pradhan, which is unmanifest. That means, Pradhan, that means this is what they're speaking of, Pradhan and Mahat. Is it so?
Yeah, it's just, Avyakta is the space in between. So Avyakta can refer to Pradhan, you know, because it's unmanifest, mm-hmm. but depending upon how detailed you're getting into it, like I think in the I can't remember this, who's explanation, if it's in Kapila Muni's or in, because we have like I think three or four different creations being described. So it's the Markandeya, it's the one of Vidura, because then in there he wants to know how the Lord's involved in everything, because mm-hmm. generally we'll say the Lord glances the material energy, all the elements separate. Mm-hmm. You know, like this, and then having separated, then he enters the universe. Then Brahma's on the lotus, and Brahma, then he creates, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of get, you know, we hit the main points, right? And then Brahma, by then hearing from the Lord, is able to understand, then he creates. So you see the Lord's connection, but in detail you don't. So then when you're dealing with the detail, then Avyakta is that space as he's glanced. These 24 elements have separated. So they have their nature and everything like that. But you can't actually produce anything from them. That's why it's still called unmanifest. Though the 24 elements are there. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So Pradhan means the 24 elements are homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
Avyakta means the 24 elements are separated, but you still can't create anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mahat means you can create something with them. Does that make sense? We're still on the metaphysical platform. So then Markandeya points out is then the demigods, the primordial demigods, you know, that are there with Mahavishnu, then who are in charge of all the different aspects, then they can't produce anything. They can't create anything because they can't combine the atoms together. So you just have all the earth atoms separated, all the water, fire, air, ether like this, but they can't do anything with it. Right? So then Krishna enters into each atom. That's why it says he's in each atom, in between each atom. Because unless super soul's in the atom, how do you get an attraction between two atoms? Right? Because Pradhan means it's just homogeneous. It's just existing there. So there's no attractive feature. And Krishna glances, so that impregnates with the living entity's time and false ego. But there's no attraction there. Because false ego is Shankarshan. Attractions Prajumna. Right? It means you also have the element of Shankarshan being the attractive, because you can say in one sense if he's taking it, he's the Sambandha, then the Prajumna aspect is there, like in Madan Mohan. You want deity, but it has both aspects. So in other words, Avyakta is the manifestation of it, but not the attractive aspect. Then when Krishna enters it, then the atoms can connect together and be held together to create the 8,400,000 species of life, the 14 planetary systems, you know, the mountains, the valleys, the plains, the waters, the air, you know, whatever is the places of action of the living entity, right? Because everybody has a body. The body's the kshetra. The kshetra has to be in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not that everyone's floating around in space and hoping to, you know, be able to catch something. But you just keep floating by, so you just have to, you know. So, you know, I mean, it would make it interesting, you know, short, but in reality, then.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense. So, therefore, that's why we generally talk about Mahat, right? Mm-hmm. So you have Pradhan and Mahatattva.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mahatattva means now it's all energized and everything's there, it's ready. All that has to be done now is manifest by Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But avyakta, they can't do that. So avyakta can refer to either in general the, what do you call it? The pradhan, because it's also unmanifest. Mm-hmm. It can mean the specifics of the detail of where the element, 24 elements are separated, but not being able to be held together. Mm-hmm. But at the same time is because everything after that, you know, the Mahatattva, because that has the forms and everything like that. But where does all the elements for those forms come from? That's from avyakta. Because avyakta is the, you could say, the go-down or the, you know, the where all this is. Right? It's not a place. It's a situation. It's a condition. Right, so these atoms are, you know, does that make sense?
So we can say that pradhan is the cause, avyakta is the effect, and then in turn, avyakta is the
Krishna
cause.
Krishna is the cause.
Yeah, Krishna is the original cause, but then
pradhan is because no, because pradhan doesn't really do anything. But I mean, if you want to say, it just keeps going down. So then in that way, everything is made out of avyakta. Right, it's the manifestation of avyakta. So in that way you can say avyakta is the source of the body. So in that way you can say, because you see the cause and the effect, you can say the body is avyakta. Because it's just a matter, it's only a temporary manifestation, so it's just a matter of time before it's not manifest. Does that make sense? So this is how you can get. But they're trying to take it back that, no, the avyakta, it means how you say, is pradhan, and so that's the cause of everything. Because we're moving around it within the world, by the body. That's how our connection. And that's how everything is known and everything like that. So the body is what can be known. Right? So then they're taking it as no, it's the avyakta or the pradhan is what's to be known. But our point is you can't know it because it's just, that's the way it says, it opens, Manasamhita opens with that the pradhan is just this big kind of, you know, very pleasant, you know, just bunch of darkness like that. Because it's indiscernible. You can't tell anything about it. But they're trying to say, no, no, we can discern. But you can't. Because it's homogeneous. There is nothing there. There is nothing to work with there. So you can't. You can only, from outside, but you can't actually discern it. You can discern that this is pradhan, but you can't just, you know, it's like that last layer of the universe is pradhan. Mm. And so then when Gopakumar is going through that, then it has that darkness, but it's an attractive darkness. Mm. Right? Because the deity there is Mohini Murti. Thank God.
Can we technically then say that everything is produced from Mahat?
It is, but you can say, you can also say avyakta. It's just a matter of which aspect you want to say. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you want to say is, okay, this was produced by this company, or this is produced by this factory, or this is produced by this person who owns the company. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's all the same thing, it's just which one you want to bring out. If you want to bring out that everything's coming from pradhan, means it's just material nature. Avyakta then means then you're looking at the analytical aspect, right? And then mahat, then you're looking at actually how it's composed, you know, the metaphysical kind of aspect that, you know, all things are there, what their natures are in that. In other words, with avyakta, there's no natures manifest. But with mahat, then you have the nature, right? It means the dog is made, the primordial dog is made out of avyakta. But there is no dog in avyakta. It's only when it becomes, when it's mahat, the attractive element is there, then you can have it put together as a dog. Does that make sense? But that's still just the metaphysical concept of the dog. Brahma makes the dogs. Right? Yeah. So now the question is, does that mean Brahma let them out, or he just made them and someone else let them out? Yeah.
For the impersonalist, avyakta, pradhan, mahatattva, brahman is more or less the same?
Yes, like that. They mean, basically, if there's any distinguishing feature, then it's illusion. Now, where that comes from, they can't define. That's the problem, is that's why I say Mayavadis, is that everything's Maya. But then the problem is we're saying we are God, but at the same time is we're illusion, so how are we God? We're separate. So if we're God, then everything's God, and so like that. And then that means if everything's God, that means the illusion is not an illusion, it's actually Brahman. But they'll say it's illusion because they can't, they're impersonal. They can't deal with the personal aspect. They can't deal that they have emotions and all these things and needs, desires, because they've only seen it on the material platform, and they're not intelligent enough to appreciate it on a higher platform. It means they don't have the spiritual intelligence, because material intelligence can't understand it. So that's the difficulty, is that all these philosophies, basically they're all the same up to the primary creation. Then in primary creation, that's where they start falling apart. You know, they'll generally get up to that, but then once you go beyond that, that's where then it doesn't work. You know, there's 8,400,000, this, the mechanics of that, basically that's, everybody accepts that. What they'll look at, you know, whether they're looking at the atoms, or looking at 24 elements, or how they're distinguishing it, is there's different ways you can put it together. Does that mean, you know, it's the same thing. It's just like Brahma is describing the 24 as 9 elements. Right? Because if you have the mind, basically it has everything else. Like that. Sometimes I think it's even less. I think there's one with 7. Like that. So, because everything comes out of all these other things, and you know, so you have different ways you can put it together. You can also add in all the, you know, those what's it? Lust, anger, greed, illusion, and madness, and then fear of death. You know, and those things that Brahma created before. Some lists count those as part of the original elements. Like that, but so they're all there. They're all part of that thing. But the elements are 24, and then these are all other aspects that then are used. Because otherwise, it just keeps going. Where do you end? So we follow, you know, here. Then Kapila Muni gave 24. That's what Bhagavatam is presenting. So that's where we. So they're all Vedic, so they accept the Vedic literatures, they accept, you know, the body, the soul, all these kind of things, up to a point. But it's, so it's generally once they get around, but as far as they can, maximum they can go is Pradhan. Because technically they're saying Brahman can't be changed, all this, but then at the same time is where does everything come from? So since they don't connect that to the Lord, then they don't actually have a very full understanding of Brahman. Like that, because Brahman, then, to be able to create all this, there must be energies. And since Brahman is unchanging, you're not going to see any change in the transformation there. So that means the transformation within the energies has to be coming from above Brahman. So then that's Paramatma's managing that, but why is that? Because of Krishna's desire. So that's then at that point that's where they fall apart. So Vedanta can deal with that, the other five schools can. But even Shankara Vedanta, then they'll still get stuck to the same ways that all the other guys get stuck. But the philosophy being more technical, they can defeat anybody else. So in here is that we see is that the Vedanta Sutra can defeat all the other five schools, but then with the Vaishnava commentaries it also defeats Shankara. That's why sometimes we'll say the six schools of Vedic philosophy and we're included in that. Yeah. Or we'll say the six schools of Vedic philosophy we're not included in. Because Vedanta is also used by Shankara. Like that. It means there's always been an impersonal concept of Vedanta. So Shankara is just taking from a few different schools and putting it together and articulating it. So then, because his purpose is to deal with the Buddhists. Before they didn't bother with Buddhists. They were, you know, it wasn't a Buddhistic philosophy, so, you know. But still it had the problem. You know, like what's his name? Sukadeva Goswami. He's impersonalist, but not a Mayavadi. Like that. So that's that'll be the difference. So Brahmavadis just are not very realized Vedantas. But they're bona fide. But Mayavadis, they're bogus, that's all. That they accept the Vedic version, that they, you know, follow the Vedic culture and all these things, and that in that aspect. So up to liberation, then basically all these schools are the same. But after liberation, then that's where all the problem comes. And the best definition then is given in Vedanta. So therefore then we're studying here how to deal with the Vedanta from the Vaishnava. So, yeah.
We see that while debating these different philosophies, Acharya also quotes that Shankaracharya says like this, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. But then why should we take resort of Shankaracharya when already we have our own Acharyas, you know, like Vyasa and others?
It means why would we quote from him if we have our own Acharyas?
Yeah.
The point is it just depends if you're quoting a Shankaracharya to show where there's a weakness in the philosophy or if you're showing that it's already been stated. Right? So if it's already been stated, then why do you need to restate it? In other words, the point is it's like logic. That's been nicely defined by Gotama, so no one else has to define logic. Does that make sense? Unless there's some aspects of Gotama that don't, he's taking his philosophy to certain levels, so then he'll deal in a certain way. For us, because we're taking it beyond that, then it becomes more sophisticated, but at the same time more simple. Right? So he deals with, I think, 10 ways of gaining knowledge. We only deal with 3. Like that. Because all 10 are there, just the other 7 are already within the 3. Like that. But the point is when it comes to logic, you refer to Gotama. So if Shankar has already made a point defeating the other 5 schools, what's the problem? Yeah. Just like to defeat the first 4 schools, then that much of the time you use Jaimini. Like that. So in other words, if Jaimini's already mentioned something, then Shankara doesn't mention it. He just refers to him. So in other words, if someone's already made the point, you just refer to them. Why you would say otherwise? But where there's a divergence, then that's where we'll say ourselves. Right? Because the Vedic version is one thing. The Veda is one thing. It's just a matter of how they're understanding it. So if they have a proper understanding, we don't have a problem with that. You know, you see Prabhupada would use that when he's dealing with the materialists. You know, the Acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where they have made a correct observation or statement, then many times we even will quote their statement to show the point. But that's as far as there goes. Then the rest of it we have to explain. You know, because if we start off with something else, they may not relate. But if you start off with their thing, then it's there, right? Just like Manu is saying about the seed in the field, right? So then the seed in the field, then if you plant an eggplant seed, what do you get? Eggplants. Now, if you plant the eggplant in soil that's suitable for an eggplant seed, then what do you get? Very good eggplants. Now, what if you put it in soil that it doesn't really like? It doesn't grow good. It's just like, let us say, spinach. It grows in sand. Like when the Ganga moves, so the first land that comes out is sand. So the first thing that goes in is spinach. You know, and it'll be like that for some years until it finally, you know, gets other things from, you know, just, you know, from floating in the air, and then it turns into something else. But if you plant it in like clay or other things like that, it won't grow. But there's other things, most things don't grow in sand. Right, spinach grows in sand. Cactus grows in sand.
Even methi grows in sand.
Methi grows in sand. So the thing is, certain things will grow there, but they won't grow in more fertile soil. Right. But that's the thing. So therefore, then the seed, you know what it is. So that means is the plant that was there and the seed. Then you're going to get the same thing. Right. Explaining all this, people may catch it or not. you say the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree, then everyone's got it. You understand? But that's as far as they can explain. They don't know why. They just know that, okay, there's an, you know, apple tree like that, and apples fall on the ground, and pretty soon you have little trees growing there, and strangely enough, you know, they're apple trees. You know, so over the centuries, then they've come to the conclusion that, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Practically, we don't use in Krishna consciousness or in our preaching specific tools as the six tools of Vedic knowledge. We use one all-purpose tool, which is Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So is that a good way to deal with
it? Yes, yes. Because see, all these six schools, because of the, as Vyasadeva, Narad Muni pointed out to him, and then Vyasadeva, who is then by Narad Muni's grace, realized is that the Veda is only talking about a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Right? That's its presentation. That's the conclusion. That worship of Krishna is the topmost activity of the living entity. Now, within that, then it will have, so all the details that come down from there, then are all that Achinta Beta Veda philosophy. So there isn't any verse, any even syllable, as Jiva Goswami points out, that doesn't fall within the purview of that. Because that's actually the original definition. Now, if someone only takes part of that, right, then it's given a different name, though even though it's part of the same process. You know, as we give the example, you have a chef. The chef knows cooking, right? But now, within that, he knows how to prepare, he knows how to clean, he knows how to market, he knows how to serve, he knows how to eat, right? He knows how to combine, you know, all the different things. Does that make sense? So he can do all that. So that's a chef. Because if he doesn't know all that, he can't actually be a chef. But if someone only knows part of that, they're not called a chef. The guy who does the marketing, he's the supplier. You know, the guys that wash pots and cut vegetables and do that, they're kitchen assistants. You know, people that serve and all, they're waiters. You know, the one that knows the whole scene and can give you some advice and all that, that's the, what is it, maitre d'? Mm-hmm. How do you say it? Like this. You know, the head waiter. You understand? Like that. So that's what's happening. So these six schools are just parts of Vedanta. Technically. But because that's their complete view of it, and it matches the variety of conditioned consciousness of the living entity. Because in the Vedic form, everybody will fit within these six. Right? That maybe they have different combinations of that and other things like that, but that's where it's going to fit. Does that make sense? So there's heads who have that and have brought it out to the finest detail, and then others will take something from here and there, like the modern philosophies. They're just bits and pieces from these. They're not even complete in these. You know what I'm saying? So they are the building blocks, you could say, of any philosophy. Does that make sense? So then someone will just take part of that. Like say Jaimini. Okay, it's about, you know, being pious and enjoying. So the goal is that you will enjoy, so you can be happy forever. Right? So Charvak just takes that part. Doesn't bother with the piety part. You know, beg, borrow, or steal to get ghee, right? You know? I'm not sure if it's Charvak or Chanakya.
Charvak.
He says about the good meal?
Yes.
Beg, borrow, steal.
No, beg, borrow, steal, that's there. No, it's another thing. That it's a niti. Maybe Charvak, but I kind of think it may be...
What is a niti?
The niti is that... if you have an opportunity to get a good meal, you should take it. Because good meals don't come along very often. getting another body and taking birth again, that's guaranteed. That's going to happen. But whether you'll get a good meal or not, that you can't guarantee.
It is not Chanakya.
Huh?
It is not Chanakya.
That's not Chanakya. So maybe that's Charva. So, you know, that's the whole point, is that if you have an opportunity, you're invited to a nice meal. Go! You know, not because, you know, you may say, oh, I can get it, you know, later, but you can't guarantee that. You know, death, birth, yeah, that you can guarantee, but getting a good meal, that you can't. So, so he just takes that part of the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So he just takes that, but leaves out the whole piety. So he kind of misses the whole point. But so like that, then you get all these other, you know, the merging part. So there's just nothing. Then that's the Buddhist aspect. You know, but the whole Vedic philosophy and all that, how that works, that they leave out. Does that make sense? So by understanding the six schools, then you can actually deal with any philosophy. Just like when Prabhupada would deal with anyone, no matter what the, he could deal with it because he knows the building blocks of what a philosophy is made out of. Right? So you know the logic, how it's put together, what's a real argument, what's a improper argument. You know the techniques, you know all the different things they're made out of. You know, like scientists, they're actually atomic theorists. They just don't know as much as Vaisheshika did. Because they don't understand where anything's coming. They just kind of know, but they don't know you get up to that level of pradhan. They don't understand that. Does that make any sense? So therefore then, when you're dealing with someone who's already established something very nicely and set it in a way that's supportive of Vedanta, then it's already been nicely explained. We'll just quote that. Right, so the acharyas, many times you see them, they're quoting from someone else. So if someone said it very nicely, like you see Prabhupada's, you know, quoting from Vira Raghavacharya and that, but I think he's in the Sri line. So it doesn't matter, you know, or Vadiraj, you know, Madhvacharya or different. Chanakya says the Niti very nice. And he says, physically, he's not a devotee. Yes. But, you know, he's by studying the Veda and all that, this has been revealed, and he's presented in a very nice way. And so then it's quoted. But we could take things all the way back directly to the Upanishads and like that. But if it's already there and it's accepted, then why not? Why wouldn't it be used? Or like in the introduction to Gita, then, or no, is it an introduction? No, I think it's before preface. Where Prabhupada is quoting from Shankaracharya in his Gita Mahatmya. Like that, because he said it so nicely, everybody accepts that.
Even Isha Upanishad also, Prabhupada is quoting Shankaracharya.
Okay.
Yes. Like how he is bringing the conclusions of Bhagavad Gita, Narayana, Paravita.
Yes. So the point is, if it's already done very clearly and succinctly, then it's used. Why reinvent the, you know, the sutra, you know. Is that okay? Yeah. And then accordingly you use examples that people will appreciate. Prabhupada will always, you see, is that the Vedic examples are the closest you can get to the example, and the reality are close. Well, sometimes other examples, you know, it has some comment, but sometimes it's stretching it. So the Vedic, the Upanishadic, these are very, very exact. And so those would be the preference. But you may take that and apply it into something modern to make it effective for the person you're talking to. But it has to be based on the Vedic principle, and you have to know the connection. Otherwise, then you might get lost.
Somebody is a nerd, does it mean that learned mind is less in this community?
Is the mind less?
I thought he was a nerd.
No, because the whole thing is all working by mind, but the point is the intellectual reasoning aspect of mind is what's prominent for them. That's how they get that definition. Because they still have to use the mind, right? They still have, you know, what they like to eat and do and wear and this and that, you know, so... They got their tennis shoes. They like those tennis shoes. They wear them for everything, you know. like that. So the mind is there, but it's not as prominent in that. So the emotions and all these different things, that the social ability to relate and deal with others and all that on that platform of Dharma or Manomoya, that's not very developed. You know, because it's all about the perception and things like that. And so that they're very good at.
For such a person, they have Krishna consciousness. What should be emphasized for them to probe this best?
It means they know the philosophy and everything like that, but they should also learn how to function in the society of devotees. So then the nectar devotion, Upadesha Amrita. Because you have to have both. You have Bhagavad Gita and Ishupanishad, but you also have to have nectar devotion, Upadesha Amrita. So these two aspects go together. So the tattva has to be understood, and the relationships. Does that make sense? So because you're going to apply the relationships, right? So sambandhya gyan means you understand it all, and then the abhideya means you apply it. So in the modern, they don't even apply their intelligence to analyzing the social, you know, construct like that. While in the Vedic, they would know that also. So even the Vedic nerds aren't as nerdy as, let's say, non-Vedic nerds like that. And so they can actually socially function with others because they know what should be done. How much they practiced it is another thing, but they know what to do. So it may be a bit more formal. Does that make sense? But they can function. That's the beauty of the Vedic culture, is no one's left out. Anyone from any place in the culture can't interact with anyone else. You know what I'm saying? You know, in the general kind of concept, on your acquaintance level. You know, becoming more close, then you have to have like-minded people. Otherwise, then, you know, it's like, you know, someone comes, you offer them a seat, you know, some water, you know, some fruit, like this. That part anybody can do and anybody can relate to. It's just after that point, then that's where the detail becomes different. You know, the Brahmin will have some simple cooking, the king has a very elaborate cooking, the tribal, we won't even talk about what he's cooking, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Have you seen that in the Vedic culture, nobody is lazy?
No, no one's lazy.
In the modern culture, many people are lazy.
Yes, well, it's defined, it's designed like that. It means why buy the machine?
Yes, for not working.
Yeah, because it'll do the work, not you. Right. So in other words, it's like this. Someone would work X amount of hours a day, a certain amount of time, and, you know, with a certain amount of effort. So now that you can increase that by getting all these other things, right? They have to wash their own clothes. They need time for that. They got to spend time for family. They got to do. So you just make all these things that'll do all that for them. Now they can work all day, you know, forever. You know, does that make sense? Yeah, because then if all these guys do all the work, then the boss, then he can actually go home. Yes. You know. Yeah.
Huh. I've seen a video that they created a robot that does RT for you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, in Japan they have that already. You go to the Shinto temples, there's a robot there. That'll chant the mantras and do whatever it is that's supposed to be done. You just put in what ritual you want to do, and they'll do it for you.
Now, who gets the benefits?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, generally it's there because the priest would be there. The common person would go there, and the priest would do. Instead of a priest, there's a robot. So, you know, maybe the common person gets some benefit, but the priest doesn't get any benefit. You know? I haven't heard of robots going back to Godhead. But,
yeah. In South also, there are huge temples. No one plays to mridanga.
No one plays.
They have some drum and one instrument, one motor will be there. It goes on it too. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mridanga. Long everywhere, even whatever South Indian temples, even if you go to Bombay or South, this thing continuously same, only one type of sound comes.
Yeah. Okay. They have it worked on a higher level. Okay. Yes.
I'm not quite sure about Brahma Parinama Bhaga, if it's unchanging. So where's the Parinama happens?
That's the problem with it. See, is Brahman is unchanging. So actually, Brahman can't transform. Right? So that's why then the actual point is Shakti Parinama Bhaga. It's the Shaktis of Brahman. But it's the Shaktis that transform, not Brahman itself. So, therefore you have, because when they say it's all one, they can't distinguish Shakti. So the Shakti is, for them, the illusion that we see is that everything's coming from illusion. Right? It's all, their idea, the jiva, all the transformation, anything that's there, the creation itself. Then the difficulty comes up is, yes, it's coming from the energy. And yes, you're dealing with Maya or illusion, but the point is Maya is under the control of Krishna. So that means then Maya is coming from Yoga Maya, right? Because you have the original formal cause. So the material cause is coming from the formal cause. But the formal cause is simply serving the original cause for Krishna. So they're making mistake. There is that. That they know that, okay, this illusion is creating everything. But the problem is they can't define where the illusions come from. Well, we can. Because it's Shakti Parinama. So it's real, but are considering it real outside the context of its connection to the Lord. That's where the illusion is. So it's not that the world doesn't exist. Is that the world doesn't exist separate from the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's where their problem comes. So they want to just say, well, Brahman, it's all Brahman, so therefore Brahman has to be what's changing. But Brahman can't change, so then that doesn't work with their philosophy. That's why then another one comes up. I think there's three or four different Mayavad philosophies, and each one's trying to plug the holes that the other one has. So if you bring everyone buys it, then it goes on. When the Vaishnavas say this is nonsense, then they shift to then they come up with the next philosophy that deals with that. But then, you know, does that make sense? So there's all these different. I think there's four different main branches, I think, that are trying to work this out, because it can't be explained unless the point is that it's the energies of the Lord that are transforming. So seeing that the qualities of the Lord are the Brahman effulgence, right? So that means it is Him. At the same time, all these are there, but they're in their impersonal state. They're there in their negative state because they're not doing anything. Right? So then, by the Lord's glance, then something's happening, but it's not happening on the you could say the transcendental platform. It's happening under the direction of the external potency. So the temporariness and all these different things are there. It's in the negative. It's not in the positive. So the spiritual energy, internal potency, is in the positive. So it just has all these qualities that are there. So in the material world, they'll be used in the negative. In the spiritual world, they're used in the positive. So that aspect of the illusion, they don't understand that is the potency of Brahman. So if they understand that, but then their problem is then there's two, but the point is the two are one. That's why Achintabheda Veda Tattva answers the problem. Because it's one, yes, but then how is their transformation? Because Brahman can't transform. That means Brahman's energy is transforming. So that's the point where their philosophy falls apart. You know, and then as you pointed out, then they come up with another philosophy. Because rather than surrender, they won't. That's why Lord Chaitanya was saying the Pashandis are all floating on this ocean of love of God. They're not, you know, sinking and tasting it. They're floating on top and ignoring it. So how to catch them?
I was thinking that illusion is created by the false identity of the living entities. That's where illusion comes from. Otherwise, in Brahman, it doesn't exist.
Yes, but the potential for because the jiva can work under either. So if he's working on the internal, that's a natural state. If he's working on the external, that's illusion. Right? So it's a potency. That's why we're saying the negative aspects are brought out. You know, the formlessness, all these different things like that. So then all these other qualities, because if you have good, you have bad. You know, they're just natural potencies. In the spiritual world, you don't need bad. Here you do. Right? You know, there's no song, I was born under a good sign. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, or I've got so much luck, I can give it away. You know, like that. You know, it's not there. It means this negative is what functions here. Mm-hmm. So then that's where they'll say is that the jiva's created illusion. But then where does the jiva come from? It was illusion that he's there. So that means illusion creates jiva, jiva creates illusion. It's all illusion, it doesn't exist. But at the same time as this jiva that's illusion is Brahman. So it means everything is Brahman, that's correct. But they can't distinguish the kinds of Brahman, the variety of Brahman. So that's their problem. So, because they're dealing with nirguna Brahman instead of saguna Brahman. So that's the difficulty. Because they're starting from the material and then projecting. Because here it's pain, so therefore there it's got to be the opposite. If here there's relationships, there's no relationships. Right? Here there's, you know, qualities and variety, there has to be none. So based on that material concept, that's where their problem comes in. So you can see right there, this is where the mechanics fall apart for them. That's why they don't like to discuss at this level, they like to discuss below that. You know, the green bird and the green tree, it sounds really good. But it's a green bird and a green tree. There's a tree and a bird. There's two things. And they're both green. Yeah, it would be. But there's two things. You know. It's not that the green bird goes into the green tree and merges into greenness. Otherwise, then, does it become the tree or does the tree become the bird? You know. Or they merge into greenness and there's no tree or bird anymore. You know what I'm saying? So there's a problem there. So as long as you just accept that because people want to be cheated, right? Then these philosophies will cheat them. But if you don't want to be cheated, then you can see is that there's a problem here. And as soon as you bring these up, then they start to, you know, move on to the next, or then they say, yes, it's ununderstandable and that, but then why are you talking about it? So you don't understand it, why you're talking like you're an authority. You know, so like this, so... And they've had, you know, 1,000 years, or was it not 1,200 years, Shankara? Yeah. So they've had 1,200 years to work on their philosophy. So whatever people bring up, they have some argument, but just generally speaking, most people just accept. Right? If they're working with scholars, then will they have many followers? You know, they may do, but they won't necessarily, you know, do nicely. But they work with the karmis, then they follow very nicely. Because right, they're pious, they do that. They don't think much about the philosophy. So then they'll get their best followers there. So, and they generally are talking bhakti and nice karmya and these kind of things that the karmis can relate to. Like that. Because once you get into this kind of stuff, They don't have anything. They'll just start, moving from point to point, just trying to, you know, escape. They don't have anything to give. This is where their philosophy falls apart. So, and they get the farthest. The others fall apart before that. They don't even really get to Brahman properly. They get to Pradhan. So,
and Buddhists get nowhere.
Yeah, and Buddhists get nowhere because they don't. Well, that's their whole point is nothingness. They don't even make it out the gate. Right? So, there is no horse. Right?
Usually people create philosophies to justify their, whatever, sense gratification, enjoyment, or something.
Yeah.
Their life is miserable.
Yes.
Why would anybody be attracted?
So that's the whole point, is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, I think in Tattva Vivek, that no one will follow it unless they bring out two points. There's the Supreme, and that, that you, everybody can cooperate together, and follow moralistic rules, because then by those moralistic rules, everybody has a at least seemingly a fair shot at enjoying. So no philosophy, no religion, unless it has these two points, will be popular. That's why you see the modern has the popular, is that the authority of the people, and that, everybody's equal, everybody will be happy. So it works very, very nicely. Yes, but one can't get distracted by that. Does that make sense? Because they go back to, like you said, they're just enjoyment. Like I was thinking, because day before yesterday, you have, the iconic sutra, the basis of, most all modern thinking, the liberty, fraternity, equity. Right? So then you're going to get that liberty means you want that freedom. So that brings out the I'm the controller. Right? The equity will bring out that, this point is we can all we're all together, we can all enjoy. So that brings out the karma aspect. And the fraternity is I am the friend. We're all friends. So that's what Krishna says in the Gita. He's the Lord of all the plants. He's the Lord of all enjoyment. And he's the friend of everyone. But when you say that, then everyone goes, oh, it's philosophy. But if you say liberty, equity, fraternity, then everybody gets up there and is ready to die for that one, right? But, the other one, then, hey, and if you understand that philosophy, you're not drinking coffee either. So then, what's the point? You can't sit around in a cafe. What's the whole point? Why be in Paris, right? So then, makes it really hard to progress in your philosophical. Yeah. So the whole point is that the basis of these things is all, like you said, it's just in justifying their sense gratification. So the impersonalism, it's all about sense gratification because it's about Brahmananda. Right? If there was no Brahmananda, he wouldn't be interested. But it's that I couldn't enjoy as an individual, so I'll enjoy as God. By being a distinct entity, I won't. But by merging into the ocean of that, then I'll be. But then the point is, if you merged, then how do you know you're happy? Because it's you, the individual, wants to be happy. But if you merge, then you're, it's not well thought out. But it is the base. That's why we say karma and jnana. They're just two sides of attraction and repulsion. They're two sides of the same coin. It's still materialism. Because too much sense gratification then will bring you to renunciation. And then the renunciation without bhakti will bring you back to sense gratification. Right? You eat so much, then you get fat, so then you go on a diet. And after going on a diet so long, then you start eating again. It's just, it goes back and forth. It's never ending. And then when you have the senses not connected to the Lord, then because people will engage the senses and there's no connection to the Lord or like that, religious principles are not the important element, then it just brings out sense gratification. Is that it? It just goes around. That's some side. It just goes around and around in circles. So that's the Vedanta Sutra is then working on that level to show that all the little points, all the arguments that they have for defining are wrong. Because they're saying, no, but here avyakta means this. We're saying, no, avyakta doesn't mean that. Because if avyakta doesn't mean the pradhan, it means the body, how it's being defined in the Upanishad, then it means then you have to follow the Vaishnava Vedanta. Right? But if you take it in theirs, then they're schooled, then they would seem it has some credence.
So when we discuss and learn, they say and us say,
yeah,
kind of more easy. But when we come to the devotee company and all us saying, and still there's some things creep in.
Yeah, but that's why you know the philosophy, then it won't creep in. Just like we said here, is that the philosophy has to have the point of there's an authority, a supreme, and that the opportunity of everybody enjoying, right? That morality that'll cause that. So, like you said, if you understand that that's what's required, then how does the New Age kind of philosophy in that, or the modern social things creep into the society because of the same exact thing? Because if it's everybody's equal, that means then we can all enjoy. But the point is if everybody's not equal, so how will they enjoy? Because how do you define what's enjoyable? What's equal for everybody? So that, because it's not equal for everybody, then you're going to require a very authoritarian government or governance, and whatever it is, to enforce that it's all equal. So that means your freedom goes. Right? Does that make sense? So, and this is the fun part. When you think of freedom, you think of liberals. But actually, liberals aren't into freedom. They're into control. Actual, absolute dictatorial control. Yeah, look at it. Communism?
No.
That's considered left. It just goes far left. So there's so much, it's so equal, there has to be so much control. You understand? That's the fun part. Is that it presents it as freedom. But actually you're not, because you have to fit in exactly how it's being defined. And since it's not being defined by Shastra, it's not being defined by a real authority, then what's the authority? It's whoever's in power. Does. You understand? That's a fun thing that was being discussed about the high saint, modernity and postmodern. Technically we're in postmodern, but it's like, so modern means is that you analyze what's here and that, and you see the qualities and all that, and then you come up with some things like that. So you're taking what's already here, so you could be technically a religious person, and accept this is God's creation, so then you study it, and then you see what's going on. But we're the ones studying, we're the ones analyzing, so in this way we're defining. But then but postmodern means you remove the authority aspect. So there is no authority, there is no religion, there is no good, there isn't like that. It's just whoever's in a position of power, they're the authority. Right? Whoever there's more of, they say that this is what it is. That's just the way it works. You understand? So therefore you have to use the masses and all that to get power. As a power base, then what you say is correct then becomes the standard. But you have to be able to maintain that and enforce that. So it's just from power, it's there. So it's not about freedom. Because the point is, since you're not dealing with the inherent nature of people, then they can't be free. because people will do something else. Does that make sense? Intellectuals will intellectualize, you know. Does that make sense? You know, managers will manage. Businessmen will make, you know, a profit off of it. You know what I'm saying? So you see it all comes in. Just you get behind that one thing. So political correctness. Now, you get behind that and all the intellectuals have their authority because they speak political correctness. Right? The politicians, they have their authority because they work according to political correctness. Right? Does that make sense? Unless you're Trump, but, right? You know, and then people make money off of that. Because politically correcting, you present it like that, then everybody wants to buy it. Does that make sense? And the common person, they're always into the idea of equality, because they're the ones that system works for. That everybody's dealt with equally and taken care of equally, that works for the common person. It doesn't work for the other three.
Therefore, for devotees, there is a Vaishnava etiquette.
There's Vaishnava etiquette, Vaishnava philosophy. That's why we've been given everything. The Vaishnava culture, we just have to accept it. If we don't accept it, then we hover on the mental speculative platform. Because what is the standard? Even amongst those who profess, who have a leaning towards this postmodern way of thinking, you know, you bring them into a room individually and ask them a set of questions to bring everyone in individually, they'll all give different answers and different combinations of what they're strict on, what they're liberal on, you know, like this. And then the next guy will be different, but you put them all in a room together, then they'll all speak as if there's one voice. So that's why nothing can get done. So the only authority is there that they have that position of power. But you put someone else in power and then it disappears, it changes like that, just in one moment. That's why it's unstable. That's why we as Vaishnavas would not prefer that as a system. Right? Because any system can be utilized if you put Krishna at the center. But if you put Krishna as the center, right? You're taking, okay, it's about the population, but the population has got to be about Krishna. What does Krishna want? So if the general populace is working to please Krishna, then you get the same thing as what we're talking about. If you talk anywhere, as soon as you add Krishna, it naturally balances. Right? They'll start in their area of emphasis, but because it's about Krishna, they have to add in what's missing. So left will come to the right, you know, towards the right will go towards the left, so it'll always come to the middle. But unless Krishna's added, it won't adjust. So that's why we say we're only interested in Krishna consciousness. You have that, everything else adjusts. Right? If it's about pleasing Krishna, then what happens with our food? Right? We have to adjust to what Krishna wants. First, if you're vegetarian, offer it to him, all these different things like that. The first offering, then vegetarian is there, right? And then you understand the science of the cooking and all these different things. And so it just adjusts what naturally how it works. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Got the summary done today. Yeah, no, we didn't even get to it. So we'll start tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda. Yeah.